And good afternoon, it's Rob McClure back again with our book reading, and we've been reading Ivanhoe by Sir Walter Scott, and we're getting towards the end of it too. Rebecca has been sentenced to be burned at the stake, and she has challenged the Grand Master of the Order of Templars that she will find a champion to defend her. And of course, Ivanhoe will probably be that champion. But meanwhile, we have a problem where Bois Guilbert, still hopelessly in love with Rebecca, is trying to persuade her to accept him as a champion who would fight for her incognito and expect her love in return. She's not too happy with that idea, but before we go on, a word from our sponsors.
The management and staff of the Araluen Hotel, a sponsor of Braywood FM 88.9, wish to advise that the hotel will be closed from the 1st of August to the 10th of August and apologise for any inconvenience caused during this period. Specialising in rural conveyancing and succession planning, Chamberlain's Law Firm are with you for all your legal needs. No matter how big or small, their lawyers can assist with a range of legal problems and advice. With offices in Braidwood, Canberra and Sydney, they have team members everywhere to assist you. Call Chamberlain's today on 6188 6200 or find them online at chamberlains.com.au to speak with their expert lawyers about your legal needs. Chamberlain's Law Firm, a sponsor of Braidwood FM 88.9.
Where should you go to see the future of farming? It's as close as White's Tractor Kubota dealer right now. The next generation of tractor has arrived, the remarkable M71 range. At the heart of Kubota's most powerful tractor ever is a 6.1-litre engine that delivers 170 horsepower of dynamic, clean efficiency like never before. At every level, the M71 has the technology that professional farming demands for success. Arrange a test drive at White's Tractor's new premises at 50 Robinson Street, Goulburn, and experience a new high-spec powerhouse from Kubota. White's Tractor's is happy to support Braywood FM.
Goulburn Workers Club is located in the heart of Goulburn CBD. There are three public bars, including a cocktail lounge, boasting 20 different products on tap across the club, as well as full tab and kino facilities. Enjoy Monday to Friday lunch specials for $10. Monday and Tuesday nights is half-price steak or salmon. Wednesday nights is two roasts for the price of one. Thursday nights is $10 chicken schnitzel. And coffee and cake deals are available 7 days a week in the cafe for $9.80. Goulburn Workers Club are proud to be a sponsor of Braidwood FM 88.9.
And a big thank you to our sponsors. They help us to keep our station going. Well, continuing on with Ivanhoe. "No, Rebecca," said the knight in a softer tone and drawing nearer towards her. "My choice is not made. Nay, it is yours to make the election. If I appear in the lists, I must maintain my name in arms. And if I do so, championed or unchampioned, you die by the stake and faggot, for there lives not a knight who has coped with me in arms on equal issue or on terms of vantage, save Richard Coeur de Lion and his minion of Ivanhoe. Ivanhoe, as you well know, is unable to bear his armour, and Richard is in a foreign prison. If I appear, then you die. Even although your charms should instigate some hot-headed youth to enter the lists in your defence." "And what avails repeating this so often?" said Rebecca. "Much," replied the Templar, "for you must learn to look at your fate on every side." "Well then, turn the tapestry," said the Jewess, "and let me see the other side." "If I appear," said Bois Guilbert, "in the fatal lists, you die by a slow and a cruel death. In pain, such as they say, is destined to the guilty hereafter. But if I appear not, then am I degraded and dishonoured, a dishonoured knight accused of witchcraft, of communion with infidels. The illustrious name, which has grown yet more so under my wearing, becomes a hissing and a reproach. I lose fame. I lose honour. I lose the prospect of such greatness as scarce emperors attain to. I sacrifice mighty ambition. I destroy schemes built as high as the mountains, with which heathens say their heaven was once nearly scaled. And yet, Rebecca," he added, throwing himself at her feet, "this greatness will I sacrifice. This fame will I renounce. This power will I forego, even now, when it is half within my grasp, if you will say, Bois Guilbert, I receive you for my lover. Think not of such foolishness, Sir Knight, answered Rebecca, but hasten to the regent, the Queen Mother, and to Prince John. They cannot, in honour to the English crown, allow the proceedings of your grandmaster. So shall you give me protection without sacrifice on your part, or the pretext of requiring requital from me. With these I deal not, he continued, holding the train of her robe. It is thee only I address, and what can counterbalance your choice? Think, were I a fiend, yet death is a worse, and it is death who is my rival. I weigh not these evils, said Rebecca, afraid to provoke the wild knight, yet equally determined neither to endure his passion nor even feign to endure it. Be a man, be a Christian. If indeed your faith recommends that mercy which rather your tongues than your actions pretend, save me from this dreadful death without seeking a requital, which would change your magnanimity into base barter. No, damsel, said the proud Templar, springing up. You shall not thus impose on me. If I renounce present fame and future ambition, I renounce it for your sake, and we will escape in company. Listen to me, Rebecca, he said, again softening his tone. England, Europe, it is not the world. There are spheres in which we may act, ample enough even for my ambition. We will go to Palestine, where Conrad, Marquis de Montserrat, is my friend, a friend free as myself from the doting scruples which fetter our free-born reason. Rather with Saladin will we league ourselves than endure the scorn of the bigots whom we condemn. I will form a new room, a new path to greatness, he continued, again traversing the room with hasty strides. Europe shall hear the loud step of him she has driven from her sons. Not the millions whom her crusaders send to slaughter can do so much to defend Palestine. Not the sabres of the thousands and ten thousands of Saracens can hew their way so deep into that land for which nations are striving as the strength and policy of me and those brethren who, in despite of yonder old bigot, will adhere to me in good and evil. You shall be a queen, Rebecca. On Mount Carmel shall we pitch the throne, which my valour will gain for you, and I will exchange my long-desired baton for a sceptre. A dream, said Rebecca, an empty vision of the night, which, were it a waking reality, affects me not. Enough that the power which you might acquire I will never share, nor hold I so light of my country or religious faith as to esteem him who is willing to barter these ties and cast away the bonds of the order of which he is a sworn member in order to gratify an unruly passion for the daughter of another people. Put not a price on my deliverance, Sir Knight. Sell not a deed of generosity. Protect the oppressed for the sake of charity and not for selfish advantage. Go to the throne of England. Richard will listen to my appeal from these cruel men. Never, Rebecca, said the Templar fiercely. If I renounce my order, for you alone will I renounce it. Ambition shall remain mine. If you refuse my love, I will not be fooled on all hands. Stoop my crest to Richard. Ask a boon of that heart of pride. Never, Rebecca, will I place the order of the Temple at his feet in my person. I may forsake the order. I will never degrade or betray it. Oh, now God be gracious to me, said Rebecca, for the succour of a man is well nigh hopeless. It is indeed, said the Templar, for proud as you are, you have in me found your match. If I enter the lists with my spear in rest, think not any human consideration shall prevent my putting forth my strength, and think then upon your own fate. To die the dreadful death of the worst criminals, to be consumed upon a blazing pile, dispersed to the elements of which our strange forms are so mystically composed. Not a relic left of that graceful frame from which we could say this lived and moved. Rebecca, it is not in woman to sustain this prospect. You will yield to my suit. Bois Guilbert, answered the Jewess, you know not the heart of women, or have only conversed with those that are lost to her best feelings. I tell you, proud Templar, that not in your fiercest battles have you displayed more of your vaunted courage than has been shown by a woman when called upon to suffer by affection or duty. I am myself a woman, tenderly nurtured, naturally fearful of danger and impatient of pain, yet, when we enter these fatal lists, you to fight and I to suffer, I feel the strong assurance within me that my courage will mount higher than yours. Farewell. I waste no more words on you. The time that remains on earth to the daughter of Jacob must be otherwise spent. She must seek the Comforter, who may hide his face from his people, but whoever opens his ear to the cry of those who seek him in sincerity and in truth. We part then? Said the Templar, after a short pause. Would to heaven we had never met, or that you had been noble in birth and Christian in faith. No, by heaven, when I gaze on you and think when and how we are next to meet, I could even wish myself one of your own degraded nation, my hand conversant with ingots and shekels instead of spear and shield, my head bent down before each petty noble, my look only terrible to the shivering and bankrupt debtor. This could I wish, Rebecca, to be near to you in life, and to escape the fearful share I must have in your death. You have spoken the Jew, said Rebecca, as the persecution of such as you are have made him. Heaven in ire has driven him from his country, but industry has opened to him the only road to power and to influence which oppression has left unbarred. Read the ancient history of the people of God and tell me if those by whom Jehovah wrought such marvels among the nations were then a people of misers and usurers. And now, proud knight, we number names amongst us to which your boasted northern nobility is as the gourd compared with the cedar. Names that ascend far back to those high times when the divine presence shook the mercy seat between the cherubim, and which drive their splendour from no earthly prince, but from the awful voice which bade their fathers be nearest of the congregation to the vision. Such were the princes of the house of Jacob. Rebecca's colour rose as she boasted the ancient glories of her race, but faded as she added with a sigh, "Ah, such were the princes of Judah! Now such no more. They are trampled down like the shorn grass and mixed with the mire of the ways. Yet there are those among them who shame not such high descent, and of such shall be the daughter of Isaac, the son of Adonikam. Farewell. I envy not your blood-won honours. I envy not your barbarous descent from northern heathens. I envy you not your faith, which is ever in your mouth, but never in your heart, or in your practice." "There is a spell on me, by heaven," said Bois Guilbert. "I almost think you besotted skeleton spoke truth, and that the reluctance with which I part from you has something in it more than is natural. Fair creature," he said, approaching near her, but with great respect, "so young, so beautiful, so fearless of death, and yet doomed to die, and with infamy and agony, who would not weep for you? The tear that has been a stranger to these eyelids for 20 years moistens them as I gaze on you. But it must be. Nothing may now save your life. You and I are but the blind instruments of some irresistible fatality that hurries us along like goodly vessels driven before the storm, which are dashed against each other and so perish. Forgive me then, and let us part at least as friends part. I have assailed your resolution in vain. My own is fixed as the adamantine decrees of fate." "Thus," said Rebecca, Do men throw on fate the issue of their own wild passions? But I do forgive you, Bois Guilbert, though the author of my early death. There are noble things which cross over your powerful mind, but it is the garden of the sluggard. The weeds have rushed up and conspired to choke the fair and wholesome blossom. Yes, said the Templar, I am Rebecca as you have spoken me, untaught, untamed, and proud, that amidst a shoal of empty fools and crafty bigots, I have attained the preeminent fortitude that places me above them. I have been a child of battle from my youth upward, high in my views, steady and inflexible in pursuing them. Such must I remain, proud, inflexible, unchanging, and of this world shall have proof. But you forgive me, Rebecca? As freely as ever victim forgave her executioner. Farewell, then, said the Templar, and left the apartment. The preceptor Albert waited impatiently in an adjacent chamber, the return of Bois Guilbert. You have tarried long, he said. I have been as if stretched on red-hot iron with very impatience. What if the Grand Master or his spy Conrad had come hither? I had paid dear for my complaisance. But what ails you, brother? Your step totters, your brow is as black as night. Are you well, Bois Guilbert? I, answered the Templar, as well as the wretch who was doomed to die within an hour. No, by the rood, not half so well. For there be those in such state who can lay down life like a cast-off garment. By heaven, Malvoisin, yonder girl has well nigh unmanned me. I'm half resolved to go to the Grand Master, abjure the order to his very teeth, and refuse to act the brutality which his tyranny has imposed on me. You are mad, answered Malvoisin. You may thus indeed utterly ruin yourself, but cannot find a chance thereby to save the life of this Jewess, which seems so precious in your eyes. Beaumanoir will name another of the order to defend his judgment in your place, and the accused will as assuredly perish, as if you had taken the duty imposed on you. 'Tis false. I will take arms on her behalf, answered the Templar haughtily, and should I do so, I think, Malvoisin, well, you know, not one of the order who will keep his saddle before the point of my lance. Yes, but you forget, said the wily adviser, you will have neither leisure nor opportunity to execute this mad project. Go to Lucas Beaumanoir, and say you have renounced your vow of obedience, and see how long the despotic old man will leave you in personal freedom. The words shall scarce have left your lips, and you will either be 100 feet underground in the dungeon of the preceptory to abide trial as a recreant knight, or, if his opinion holds concerning your possession, you will be enjoying straw, darkness, and chains in some distant convent cell, stunned with exorcisms and drenched with holy water, to expel the foul fiend which has obtained dominion over you. You must to the lists, Brian, or you are a lost and dishonoured man. I will break forth and fly, said Bois Guilbert. Fly to some distant land to which folly and fanaticism have not yet found their way. No drop of the blood of this most excellent creature shall be spilled by my sanction. You cannot fly, said the preceptor. Your ravings have excited suspicion, and you will not be permitted to leave the preceptory. Go and make the essay. Present yourself before the gate and command the bridge to be lowered, and mark what answer you will receive. You are surprised and offended. But is it not better for you? Were you to fly, what would ensue but the reversal of your arms, the dishonour of your ancestry, the degradation of your rank? Think on it. Where shall your old companions in arms hide their heads when Brian de Bois Guilbert, the best lance of the Templars, is proclaimed recreant amid the hisses of the assembled people? What grief will be at the court of France? With what joy will the haughty Richard hear the news that the knight that set him hard in Palestine and well-nigh darkened his renown has lost fame and honour for a Jewish girl whom he could not even save by so costly a sacrifice. Malvoisin, said the knight, I thank you. You have touched the string at which my heart most readily thrills. Come of it what may, recreant I shall never, it will never be added to the name of Bois Guilbert. Would to God Richard or any of his vaunted minions of England would appear in these lists, but they will be empty. No one will risk to break a lance for the innocent, the forlorn. The better for you if it prove so, said the preceptor. If no champion appears, it is not by your means that this unlucky damsel shall die, but by the doom of the Grand Master, with whom rests all the blame. And who will count that blame for praise and commendation? True, said Bois Guilbert, no champion appears. I am but a part of the pageant, sitting indeed on horseback in the lists, but having no part in what is to follow. None whatever, said Malvoisin. If no champion appears, they do not appear. No more than the image, the armed image of St. George, when it makes part of a procession. Well, I will resume my resolution, replied the haughty Templar. She has despised me, repulsed me, reviled me. And wherefore should I offer up to her whatever of estimation I have in the opinion of others? Malvoisin, I will appear in the lists. He left the apartment hastily as he uttered these words, and the preceptor followed to watch and confirm him in his resolution. For in Bois Guilbert's fame he had himself a strong interest, expecting much advantage from his being one day at the head of the order, not to mention the preferment which Montfaucet had given him hopes of, on condition he would forward the condemnation of the unfortunate Rebecca. Yet, although in combating his friend's better feelings, he possessed all the advantage which a wily, composed, selfish disposition has over a man agitated by strong and contending passions. It required all Malvoisin's art to keep Bois Guilbert steady to the purpose he had prevailed on him to adopt. He was obliged to watch him closely to prevent his resuming his purpose of flight, to intercept his communication with the Grand Master, lest he should come to an open rupture with his superior, and to renew from time to time the various arguments by which he endeavoured to show that in appearing as champion on this occasion, Bois Guilbert, without either accelerating or ensuring the fate of Rebecca, would follow the only course by which he could save himself from degradation and disgrace. Chapter 40. When the Black Knight, for it becomes necessary to resume the train of his adventures, left the trysting tree of the generous outlaw, he held his way straight to a neighbouring religious house of small extent and revenue, called the Priory of St. Botolph, to which the wounded Ivanhoe had been removed when the castle was taken, under the guidance of the faithful Garth and the magnanimous Womba. It is unnecessary at present to mention what took place in the interim between Wilfred and his deliverer. Suffice it to say that after long and grave communication, messengers were dispatched by the prior in several directions, and that on the succeeding morning the Black Knight was about to set forth on his journey, accompanied by the jester Womba, who attended as his guide. "We will meet," he said to Ivanhoe, "at Coningsburg, the castle of the deceased Athelstan, since there your father Cedric holds the funeral feast for his noble relation. I would see your Saxon kindred together, Sir Wilfred, and become better acquainted with them than heretofore. You also will meet me, and it shall be my task to reconcile you with your father." So saying, he took an affectionate farewell of Ivanhoe, who expressed an anxious desire to attend upon his deliverer. But the Black Knight would not listen to the proposal. "Rest this day. You will have scarce strength enough to travel on the next. I will have no guide with me but honest Womba, who can play priest or fool, as I shall be most in the humour." "And I," said Womba, "will attend you with all my heart. I would fain see the feasting at the funeral of Athelstane, for if it not be full and frequent, he will rise from the dead to rebuke the cook, the sower, and the cupbearer, and that were a sight worth seeing. Always, Sir Knight, I will trust your valour with making my excuse to my master Cedric, in case mine own wit should fail." "And how should my poor valour succeed, Sir Jester, when thy light wit halts? Resolve me that." Wit, Sir Knight, replied the jester, may do much. He is a quick, apprehensive knave who sees his neighbour's blind side and knows how to keep the lee gauge when his passions are blowing high. But valour is a sturdy fellow that makes all split. He rows against both wind and tide and makes way notwithstanding. And therefore, good Sir Knight, while I take advantage of the fair weather in our noble master's temper, I will expect you to bestir yourself when it grows rough. Sir Knight of the Fetterlock, since it is your pleasure so to be distinguished, said Ivanhoe, I fear me you have chosen a talkative and troublesome fool to be your guide, but he knows every path and alley in the woods as well as e'er a hunter who frequents them, and the poor knave, as you have seen, is as faithful as steel. No, said the knight, and he have the gift of showing my road. I shall not grumble with him that he desires to make it pleasant. Fare you well, kind Wilfred. I charge you not to attempt to travel till tomorrow at the earliest. So saying, he extended his hand to Ivanhoe, who pressed it to his lips, took leave of the prior, mounted his horse, and departed with Wamba for his companion. Ivanhoe followed them with his eyes until they were lost in the shades of the surrounding forest, and then returned to the convent. But shortly after matinsong he requested to see the prior. The old man came in haste, and inquired anxiously after the state of his health. "It is better," he said, "than my fondest hope could have anticipated. Either my wound has been slighter than the effusion of blood led me to suppose, or this balsam has wrought a wonderful cure upon it. I feel already as if I could bear my corslet, and so much the better, for thoughts pass in my mind which render me unwilling to remain here longer in inactivity." "Now, the saints forbid," said the prior, "that the son of the Saxon Cedric should leave our convent ere his wounds were healed. Oh, it were shame to our profession were we to suffer it." "Nor would I desire to leave your hospitable roof, venerable father," said Ivanhoe, "did I not feel myself able to endure the journey and compelled to undertake it." "And what can have urged you to a sudden departure?" said the prior. "Have you never, holy father," answered the knight, "felt an apprehension of approaching evil, for which you in vain attempt to assign a cause? Have you never found your mind darkened like the sunny landscape by the sudden cloud which augurs a coming tempest? And think you not that such impulses are deserving of attention as being the hints of our guardian spirits that danger is impending?" "I may not deny," said the prior, crossing himself, "that such things have been, and have been of heaven, but then such communications have had a visibly useful scope and tendency. But you, wounded as you are, what avails it you should follow the steps of him who you could not aid were he to be assaulted?" "Prior," said Ivanhoe, "you do mistake. I am stout enough to exchange buffets with anyone who will challenge me to such traffic, but were it otherwise, may I not aid him were he in danger by other means than by force of arms? It is but too well known that the Saxons love not the Norman race, and who knows what may be the issue if he break in upon them when their hearts are irritated by the death of Athelstane and their heads heated by the carousal in which they will indulge themselves. I hold his entrance among them at such a moment most perilous, and I am resolved to share or avert the danger, which, that I may the better do, I would crave of you to use some palfrey whose pace may be softer than that of my destrier." "Surely," said the worthy churchman, you shall have my own ambling jennet, and I would it ambled as easy for you, and for your sake, as for that of the Abbot of St. Albans. Yet this will I say for Malkin, for so I call her, that unless you were to borrow a ride on the juggler's steed that paces a hornpipe amongst the eggs, you could not go on a journey on a creature so gentle and smooth-paced. I have composed many a homily on her back to the edification of my brethren of the convent and many poor Christian souls." "I pray you, reverend father," said Ivanhoe, "let Malkin be got ready instantly, and bid Garth to attend me with my arms." "Nay, but fair sir," said the prior, "I pray you to remember that Malkin has as little skill in arms as her master, and that I warrant not her enduring the sight or weight of your full panoply. Oh, Malkin, I promise you, is a beast of judgment and will contend against an undue weight. I did but borrow the fructus temporum from the priest of St. Bees, and I promise you she would not stir from the gate until I had exchanged the huge volume for my little breviary. Trust me, holy father, said Ivanhoe, I will not distress her with too much weight, and if she calls a combat with me, it is odds but she has the worst. This reply was made while Garth was buckling on the knight's heels a pair of large gilded spurs, capable of convincing any restive horse that his best safety lay in being conformable to the will of the rider. The deep and sharp rails which Ivanhoe's heels were now armed began to make the worthy prior repent of his courtesy, and comment, No, but, fair sir, now I bethink me, my Malkin abideth not the spur. Better it were that you tarry for the mare of our Mansipal down at the Grange, which may be had a little more than an hour, and cannot but be tractable in respect that she draweth much of our winter firewood and eats no corn. I thank you, reverend father, but will abide by your first offer, as I see Malkin is already led forth to the gate. Garth shall carry my armour, and for the rest rely on it, that as I will not overload Malkin's back, she shall not overcome my patience. And now, farewell. Ivanhoe now descended the stairs more hastily and easily than his wound promised, and threw himself upon the jennet, eager to escape the importunity of the prior, who, stuck as closely to his side as his age and fatness would permit, now singing the praises of Malkin, now recommending caution to the knight in managing her. She is at the most dangerous period for maidens as well as mares, said the old man, laughing at his own jest, being barely in her 15th year. Ivanhoe, who had other web to weave than to stand canvassing a palfrey's paces with its owner, lent but a deaf ear to the prior's grave advices and facetious jests, and having leapt on his mare and commanded his squire, for such Garth now called himself, to keep close by his side, he followed the track of the black knight into the forest, while the prior stood at the gate of the convent, looking after him, and saying, Saint Mary, how prompt and fiery be these men of war! I would I had not trusted Malkin to his keeping, for crippled as I am, with the cold rheum, I am undone if aught but good befalls her, and yet, said he, recollecting himself, as I would not spare my own old and disabled limbs in the good cause of old England, so Malkin must even run her hazard on the same venture. It may be that they will think our poor house worthy of some munificent guerdon, or it may be they will send the old prior a pacing nag. And if they do none of these, well, as great men will forget little men's service, truly I shall hold me well repaid in having done that which is right. And, it is well nigh fitting time to summon the brethren to breakfast in the refectory. Ah, I doubt they will obey that call more cheerily than the bells and primes and matins. So the prior of St. Botolph's hobbled back again into the refectory to preside over the stockfish and ale, which was just serving out for the friar's breakfast. Percy and important, he sat him down at the table, and many a dark word he threw out of benefits to be expected to the convent, and high deeds of service done by himself, which at another season would have attracted observation. But as the stockfish was highly salted, and the ale reasonably powerful, the jaws of the brethren were too anxiously employed to admit of their making much use of their ears, nor do we read of any of the fraternity who was tempted to speculate upon the mysterious hints of their superior, except Father Diggory, who was severely afflicted by a toothache, so that he could only eat on one side of his jaws. In the meantime, the Black Champion and his guide were pacing at their leisure through the recesses of the forest, the good knight, while humming to himself the lay of some enamoured troubadour, sometimes encouraging by questions the prating disposition of his attendant, so that their dialogue formed a whimsical mixture of song and jest, of which we would fain give our readers some idea. You are then to imagine his knight, such as we have already described him, strong of person, tall, broad-shouldered, and large of bone, mounted on his mighty black charger, which seemed made on purpose to bear his weight, so easily he paced forward under it, having the visor of his helmet raised, in order to admit freedom of breath, yet keeping the beaver or the underpart closed, so that his features could but be imperfectly distinguished. but his ruddy and brown cheekbones could be plainly seen, and the large and bright blue eyes that flashed from under the dark shade of the raised visor, and the whole gesture and look of the champion expressed careless gaiety and fearless confidence, a mind which was unapt to apprehend danger and prompt to defy it when most imminent, yet with whom danger was a familiar thought, as with one whose trade was war and adventure. The jester wore his usual fantastic habit, but late accidents had led him to adopt a good-cutting falchion instead of his wooden sword, with a large target to match it, of both which weapons he had, notwithstanding his profession, shown himself a skilful master during the storming of Torquilston. Indeed, the infirmity of Womba's brain consisted chiefly in a kind of impatient irritability, which suffered him not long to remain quiet in any posture, or adhere to any certain train of ideas, although he was for a few minutes alert enough in performing any immediate task or in apprehending any immediate topic. On horseback, therefore, he was perpetually swinging himself backwards and forwards, now on the horse's ears, then on the very rump of the animal, now hanging both his legs on one side, now sitting with his face to the tail, moping, mowing, and making a thousand apish gestures, until his palfrey took his freak so much to heart as to fairly lay him at his length on the green grass, an incident which greatly amused the knight, but compelled his companion to ride more steadily thereafter. And that's our book reading for this week. It's been a cold day today, Braidwood. And just reminding you that on Sunday between 2 and 3.15 at the Uniting Church in Braidwood, the Luminescence Group will be presenting a program, really a learning experience about the way in which music from the Baroque period could contain hidden meanings that go back several centuries beforehand. I think you're in for a marvellous treat if you are able to go. Cash only at the door, $45 for adults, $35 for under 35s, $18 for those under the age, $25 for those under the age of 18. I do hope you'll be able to get there. It should be a wonderful program. Until then, oh, and by the way, you can access the interview. I believe it's well worth listening to. They were wonderful. Anna Freer and AJ America. They had so much to say, and they're such happy, intelligent, informative people. You'll find that interview on our website under occasional interviews. Until next Monday, Braidwood, keep well.